My name is Chris Main. I'm talking with Mr. Ian W. Campbell in Victoria on May 10, 1978. Mr. Campbell, I was wondering if you could give us a brief background on your civilian background, where you were born, what area, family background, things like that.
Well, I was born in Winnipeg in 1923, and shortly after that we moved to Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. My father worked for CPR. Then we were, in 1933, we moved to Lethbridge. I went to high school there, and my parents lived there for quite some time after the war.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned before that you were in the militia.
Well, I was in a militia battery in Lethbridge. I joined it in 1939. I was 16 then. And that summer we went to Shiloh using old 18-pounders and rented trucks for training. Then the following year, 1940, we went to Sarcy Camp, and again in 1941. And I was a sergeant in that 112th Field Battery. And in October 1941, the field battery was mobilized as the 112th Light Anti-Aircraft Battery, forming part of the 6th Light Anti-Aircraft Regiment. And we were stationed in the old RCMP barracks in Lethbridge while the battery assembled, and various gunners were sent off to basic training in all sorts of places across Canada. I was sent to a junior leader school in Megantic in Quebec in the fall, and then at Christmas time I went to an artillery training school in Winnipeg and was there until towards the end of January. Then the regiment assembled at Petawawa, and in February we were sent to Prince Rupert. Our battery, or troop of our battery, went to Prince Rupert and set up anti-aircraft defenses around the town there.
What, in British Columbia here?
Yeah.
Fear of the Japanese.
That's right. They were much panicked in those days.
And this is early 1942 then?
Early in 1942, yeah. I think February we sent a troop out there. Eventually the whole battery arrived. Some of the other batteries, I don't know where they went, somewhere along the coast. And then we detached the troop up to Annette Island off Ketchikan in May or sometime around there, which I went with that troop. They were constructing an airfield there. And I believe in July we were replaced by reserve batteries that had been mobilized, and we went back to Petawawa. And we did further training there, and then we went overseas in, I believe it was October 1942, as a regiment. We went on the Queen Elizabeth.
You went over on the Queen Elizabeth?
Yes.
Yeah. When did your battery and that become part of the permanent forces, rather than make the switch from militia to...
It was a reserve army battery, and it was mobilized in October 1941.
Mobilized in 41.
Yeah.
So in 41 you made the transition from sergeant in the militia to regular forces.
I went back to a Lance Sergeant.
Went back to Lance Sergeant then. Okay.
The 112th Battery had quite a few permanent force members from the Coast Artillery branch out here. Hmm. The commanding officer was a Major Phipps. I believe he still lives in Victoria now.
Is that right? Yeah. What was your uniform and conditions and barracks and food and things like this like as a militiaman?
Well, it was all tents.
It was all just tents.
Eh? And you had denim battle dress.
Your clothing wasn't first class, I gather.
We had American rifles. I think they were 303 caliber. We had 18-pounders, which were relics of the First World War, with rubber tires. They weren't bad. Towards the In 1941, I think we'd at least succeeded in getting a 25-pounder in Lethbridge, one or two of them. I can't really recollect that, but it seems to me we... But most of the artillery training was at the artillery schools was still being done in Canada on the 18-pounders.
So was that gathered until you got to England before you started the serious...
No, they were manufacturing Bofor guns in Canada, and we were equipped with Canadian-made Bofor guns in Petawawa. When we went to Prince Rupert, we had a half a dozen of them. They were right from the factory. They were on the same train as we were.
Is that right?
We had to strip them down, put them together there. When we arrived in Prince Rupert, there was no place to stay. I don't think anybody knew we were coming. So I, with my detachment, I lived in an abandoned culvert for a while that we boarded up the ends, and then we built gun platforms, and we built a mess hall of lumber we found in the streets. And I lived in a upper floor of a public works garage down over the fish cannery there, and we used to go up to the courthouse to wash and shave. And we were driven to the mess tent for food. But we were all scattered all over the place.
You just scattered all over?
Well, it was rather rough the first month there. It rained and snowed, I think, for about 30 days without stopping. The summer was nice, except for the mosquitoes.
So you said then you went back to Petawawa.
Yeah.
And then down to Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah, and landed in Britain in November, I think, October, November. I can recollect as we got off, we were taken off the Queen Elizabeth in lighters at Gourock, I think it was. And at that time, Brigadier welcoming us announced that the Battle of Alamein had been successful, so that's how I recollect the time. Then we got on a train and we went all night down to Colchester. Mm-hmm. Arrived there at 5 in the morning, pelting down rain, and were driven to Sir Bryan Barracks, it was, which were two-story brick things built about the war, the Boer War, built for that, with iron beds. Straw palliasses. But Colchester was not a bad place. We were there off and on. The regiment went to Cark, up in, I think it was Lancashire, for firing camp. I promptly got pneumonia and didn't go on that effort. Then we went to St. Agnes in Cornwall. And then we moved to Eastbourne, where we had gun positions in the town there. Then we went to St. Agnes again for firing camps. And I don't think we went back to Colchester now. I can't recollect that. But we were on gun positions at Borden and Eastbourne, principally around that area, off and on, between firing camps. And we went on, I think there was an artillery training scheme, and it seemed to me it was early 1943. I can't recollect whether it was before or after Spartan scheme, which took place in 43, but we went up to the northern part of England for an artillery training exercise. We were anti-aircraft protection. We didn't participate in the exercises like that. And then we went on Spartan scheme, which was rather confusing. And then, towards the fall of 1943, I went to a light anti-aircraft officer training regiment, 142 light anti-aircraft training regiment. That was up in Flandrin-Dodwells in Wales. Mm-hmm. This would be about 6 or 7 month course.
And this was your officer training?
Yeah. And then we moved to, that school was moved to Oswestry in Shropshire. And then I guess we were finished that business just around D-Day, shortly after D-Day, we went back to Aldershot and then down to Seaford, or New Haven, somewhere down there. New Haven, I think it was. And that wasn't very exciting.
While you were with the anti-aircraft, did you engage the enemy, I guess that'd be the word.
I think some of our guns did. I never had the opportunity to. You couldn't fire at night unless they illuminated the plane. You know, we used to hear them overhead. You could see the German bombers, all right, but you could never see them. There, some of them would become quite low overboard after they'd bombed London, but mm-hmm. I don't think any of our guns, of our battery, engaged. Well, the air activity was rather low. They were small raid in London, mostly fighter bombers, so you didn't get a chance to see them. They stayed quite high. It would only be the occasional one that would be down low, and then you couldn't see it anyway. But then, by that time, night fighters were pretty efficient. So, and we didn't have any radar-laid guns or anything like that. So.
What did you think of London itself and just England itself? Wartime.
No, I didn't.
General impressions at all?
I only went to London a few times and passed through. I didn't particularly care for London. We used to have a fairly good time in the smaller villages and towns. Mm-hmm. I did go to London once or twice, but I wouldn't have gone there for any extended leave or anything like that.
Okay. How about the rationing and things like that?
Well, the food was good in the army. Depended how the cooks handled it, but generally speaking, it was fairly good. In the 112th Battery, we had pretty good cooks. We had people who had been in lumber camps here and could handle food and turned out pretty good stuff. We used to do a lot of our own cooking when we were on isolated detachments. I'd cook the meals and make somebody clean up the pots and pans. So a lot of places were with a concrete hut or a place with a stove in it. But each gun had a Coleman stove or something like that. Maybe about 10 men and 8 or 9 men in the detachment. So we were fairly self-sufficient that way. And you were generally, on gun positions, you're in isolated places, especially around Borden. It was different in Eastbourne. I was in the backyard of a house that they requisitioned. Whereas at Borden, we were out in an open field, seemed to be about 2 miles from anywhere, And you did your daily maintenance and your food, and mounted your sentries at night. Black, real dark at night, no lights around the place. But that was rather a good life in a way. You're independent. You saw an officer maybe once a day.
So you were still a sergeant at this time?
Yeah.
Sergeant?
Yeah.
What was your officer training like?
Oh, usual obstacle course training. And, I think the general map reading and military law and all these things, which quite a few of the Canadian NCOs that came from our regiment and other regiments were fairly well up on. It was a British school. They had a lot of people in there who weren't familiar with the weapon at all, the Beaufort gun.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't very difficult for us. Most of us were familiar with the operation and organization of a regiment and the way it was handled by the troop leaders and this sort of thing, so I think we probably took a little too long there. But if you hadn't had any military experience, there were quite a few Polish NCOs there too who were pretty wide experience. Some of them had been in Poland, of course most of them had been in Poland, the Polish army, and then they'd been in France and chased out of France, so they had been around.
Yeah. So in officer school you were with the Free Polish, were you with any other nationality or Commonwealth troops at all?
Just British soldiers.
Just British soldiers and some Free Polish, that's it.
Yeah.
Well then how did you end up in an infantry regiment?
We got tired of sitting around New Haven. 50 of us. They brought over a bunch of quite a few light anti-aircraft officers from Canada when the danger diminished. And of course, if there were any postings to regiments, they were much senior to us. And of course, would Well, we just hung around Seaford, and that was rather deadly. We didn't do anything. So another chap and I and a few others volunteered for everything we could think of, including the infantry, and they took us up on that, and we went up to Stenning for 6 weeks of infantry training. And, the most light anti-aircraft regiments had been put through a fairly intensive infantry-type training. In 1943, I was sent up to a battle training school in Wales again, and then we were taught how to instruct the regiment, and the regiment came up with their guns and everything, and we went through infantry training exercises with them. So, the light anti-aircraft people they had a pretty fair background for infantry training, as well as most of them had the basic infantry training in Canada. But at Stenning, we had instructors who were officers from Italy and France who'd been in action, and their instruction was quite valuable. I think there were probably about 40 or 50 officers in that group who had volunteered to join the infantry. A couple of weeks' time, them that didn't volunteer arrived at the same place.
It didn't matter, eh?
No, it just delayed things. The first group, we all went to Italy, which took quite some time to get there. The second group all went to France and didn't waste any time getting into action. What time we got to Italy? October 44 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then we were sent to various brigades and then to various regiments and then put through further instruction and training with the regiment and at a brigade school they'd established. There wasn't much activity by the time I got up north there. Just these clean up on these various places. That Granarola thing was the first encounter I had. I joined the regiment on shortly before Christmas. And then we had a rather line for Christmas. They had Christmas dinner in a hotel on the coast there Cherville, I think it was. No, Chisinautico, I believe it was, yeah.
So you joined the regiment itself just after they had been there. On the 10th of December, I have here the Loyal Edmonton Regiment went to the 1st Brigade Command.
I wasn't there. Yeah.
You weren't there until just before Christmas then?
I had joined them before Christmas, but they sent me on a brigade training school with several other officers. Mm. So I missed that action.
I see. Where was the training school itself? Do you remember off the top? Can you name the places? A very good map, I look at.
I think it was down near Riccione or someplace down there. I can't recollect.
What was your general impression of Italy itself when you got there? Did you have time to get acclimatized or pick up some?
Well, the first impression wasn't that great. We landed in Naples and you're mustered in a square near the harbor, which had been shelled by the Royal Navy. And there were lots of demobilized Italian soldiers running around in rather raggedy uniforms. And, well, I really didn't know what to expect. And then we went out to the main reinforcement depot at Avellino, which had been a bit knocked about too. And we hung around there for a while. We got sorted out into which brigade and regiment were represented from the various brigades there. And then we set off to go up to a little town north of Ancona. I can't recollect the name of it now. We went over to I think Benevento and down to Brindisi. And we hung around Brindisi for 3 or 4 days. Then we were put on a small Italian ship that was called the Argentina, I believe. We went up the Adriatic to Ancona. We got off that ship there in the harbor. And then I think I went to Riccione, where I first met the people from the regiment.
So you weren't really assigned to a particular regiment, or you were selected back when you first got off to be part of the Edmontons?
Well, it went like this. I think it was Paul Triquet was in command of that reef at depot. How many, who wants to go to the 1st Brigade, 2nd Brigade, 3rd Brigade, and so on? And if you were a Western Canadian, you normally thought, well, I'll go to a 2nd Brigade. It's mostly Westerners in it.
Mm-hmm.
Then somebody else from the brigade said, well, what regiment? You know, I didn't want to be in the PPCLI, so I... and coming from Alberta, I thought, well, why not, you know?
Not the Edmonton, certainly. What'd you have against the PPCLI?
I didn't want to be part of a permanent force regiment.
Permanent force regiment itself, eh?
Yeah.
And I know my father wasn't fond of PPCLI either. I just wonder, I've heard that out by a few people that have been over there. He was, as I said, my dad was in Calgary, so.
I think they ran a little, their show a little more formally and that sort of thing, which didn't appeal to me.
No, I know this is PPCLI territory in this town. I just find it very interesting that a lot of, well, I don't know if this is the norm, but it seems to me a lot of the Western Canadian regiments, especially Prairie regiments, really didn't want to be associated with.
Yeah. Well, we got along well enough with them, but I think we got along better with the Sea Force.
For the Sea Force,
then? Hmm. We never had a band, and the Sea Force had a pipe band, and the PPCLI had a drum and bugle band, so if we did any little beat retreat or something in some of the towns, I think we did it once in a little town called Fano. We had an evening ceremony there, and we borrowed the Seaforth band for that occasion, and then the next night, I guess, the PPCLI took over, and they had their fifes and drums out in the street there, and made a big racket. The townspeople watched all this going on. Well, I don't know. Just the way that the PPCLI went about things. They had their style and we had ours. We liked ours, I guess they liked theirs.
That's good. When you came over to Italy itself, what kind of transportation did you have? I missed that when you came over. I know you took the small Argentine boat up.
Oh, we went
up to the
Adriatic. From Naples to...
I was thinking from England to Naples itself, though. Italy itself.
Well, we were in we went up to the Clyde, and we got on board a fairly large vessel at King George V dock, and I can't remember the name of it, but there would be 3,000 or 4,000 soldiers on board, British, Canadian, and that sort of thing. It had been a banana boat or a fleet vessel. It had reasonable accommodation. And but it still utilized the holds for, troop decks. And we went in convoy down to Gibraltar. Hung around there for a while and then off to Naples. It wasn't a rough trip or anything like that. The weather was quite nice in the Mediterranean, and that wasn't that great in the Irish Sea or whichever way we went. In fact, it was a ghastly night when we got on board in the Clyde. It was windy, raining. I think the ship dragged its anchor and got tangled up in another one, and that took a bit of sorting out in the middle of the night. Eventually, we took off, and off we went. Troop ships aren't the greatest accommodation anyway.
No.
But it wasn't a bad trip. It wasn't rough or anything like that.
Well, after you went into to the brigade school, is that the correct title of the school itself?
It was a rather informal thing, just organized by the brigade. They'd gather up a group of officers and people they thought needed further training and would go and out to where some battle had been and sort of refight it on paper, sort of thing. You'd go and look at the ground and problems and that sort of thing.
So this is run by the brigade itself?
Oh yeah, some officers in the brigade would run it. It didn't last very long, a week or 10 days, something like that.
After you finished the training, then where did you go?
Well, I went back to the regiment. And I think they did some action before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't participate in that. I was one of what they call the LOBs, left out of battle. So anyway, I joined them shortly before Christmas. And I was given command of 16 platoon and D company. And then shortly after that, we participated in the attack in Granarola. That was on January the 3rd.
Right.
Apparently, as I recollect, the Sea Force would make a pincer movement to come in from the rear of the town, and we were to come in from the our side of the town. And we marched off. It was supposed to be a dawn attack, but it didn't quite pan out that way. We got delayed, and it was a daylight venture. C4, I was in the lead platoon of the company. And really, the first time I'd come under fire, we were mortared as we approached the town. There's a sugar factory there, and a railway line going to the sugar factory. We were mortared there from back over the Senu, I guess. By this time, the Germans were bailing out. The Sea Force were coming in from the other side. It was just getting dawn, and of course, you could see in the, down the street figures going in and out of houses, and you didn't know who they were. At least we didn't. One of my brain gunners fired a few rounds down the street. Shortly after that, there were a couple of irate Sea Force Highlanders appearing. We didn't suffer any casualties, I think, at that point. Then we occupied the sugar factory itself, and there was an embanked reservoir, and the Germans were the other side of that, and we were there. We dug in there. There were a lot of Italian civilians in the basement of this factory. They were still there. And our company dug in around the place, and we were fairly heavily mortared or shelled that night, and the second commander of the company was killed that night. He was out wandering about, I guess, inspecting the various platoon positions or something. I can't remember his name now, but he was killed that night. I don't think we suffered any other casualties, maybe one or two wounded. I don't know whether it was the next day or that same afternoon. It might have been the same afternoon. I remember seeing I think it was the West Nova Scotia Regiment do their part of the attack on our right, come up to the canal or river, whatever it was. We were dug in along them. We could see them. We were up fairly far. Well, we were in the sugar factory in our surrounding area, and they'd come up. Well, there it is there, how they were coming up to the canal through there, but we were already there by that time. They seemed to suffer a few casualties on that approach. I saw a few people get knocked over. I don't know how they made out. Then we stayed there for a while.
What was your impression or feelings, if you can remember them now, of being mortared and being under fire for the first time and having men under your command?
Well, the noise and confusion. I was quite excited, I suppose. I don't really I heard the mortar bombs burst on the pavements in the surrounding area, but it didn't really upset me. I was trying to do the job the best way I could and create a reasonably good impression of it. Well, I don't think I really put on much of a show that time. I think the NCOs carried the show, although they weren't really, wasn't really an engagement as far as we were concerned. It was just an advance.
Mm-hmm.
But you get fairly excited, and you really have difficulty trying to understand what's going on and issue the proper orders. Although, to say we, I think eventually I got the hang of it.
The mortars didn't bother you that much, though. I've been told.
Well, I heard them come down with a bang. You don't really hear them coming, except the first one. And, I didn't. Well, you'd like to get out of the way. But
yeah, of course. Yeah. I was wondering if you were aware of the original plan to go into Granarola. Is that the
Granarola? Yeah.
Granarola. I understood that the original plan was for the loyal Edmontons to seize Granarola, and then along with a bunch of others, whoever else was around, to rush off to Bologna after that. And this was all devised in November, early December, and it seems figured out that it took an entire month before the Edmontons even got to Granarola, and not through their own actions, of course, but through government, command decisions. They didn't follow through with that plan. So if you had any thoughts on that, or
my impression was that by that time they'd given up that idea, if they'd ever had it, and I don't know whether they had it or not, but it was certainly a very difficult country to get from up through Rimini, past the airfield, and these darn rivers one after the other. That wasn't the easiest country in the world, and I think the divisions were... We were down to a fairly modest establishment by that time. The reinforcements weren't easy to come by. I think everybody was tired. The Germans were in fairly strong positions. It seems to me that whatever plans had been prepared beforehand, the plan when I was there was merely to close up to the Senio River and call it off for the rest of the winter, which is exactly what happened. After the Corps left Italy, of course, that's where in that area there was where the British launched the major attack that finally caused the surrender of the German armies in Italy on their way up to the Po. That's
mm-hmm.
They went through this Senio River area, probably crossed it somewhere in this area here.
What was your impression of the German forces professionally?
Well, the ones I encountered weren't exactly that